The recordings have started. You may now proceed.
Thank you ever so much, Lawrence. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the GNSO Working Group Newcomer Open House session on the 4th of June 2015. On the call today, we have Emadé Aziz, Fredo Talonsky, Heath Dixon, Heather Diaz, Jennifer Scott, Joseph, Sarah Bocchi, Scott Harlan, and Esuchi Kitamura. We have our presenter today is John Berard, and from staff, we have Mary Wong and myself, Natalie Peregrine. So I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for purposes of the transcription. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Mary.
Thank you, Natalie. Hello, everybody. My name is Mary Wong from ICANN staff, and I'd like to echo Natalie's welcome and thanks to you for joining our session. The purpose of today's session is not just to give you a sense of how the GNSO, the generic name supporting organization, works and how we conduct our policy development processes, but to allow you a chance to ask questions either of us as staff or of John, our presenter for today. And I'd like to thank John for taking the time to come and do this presentation and answer the questions. Some of you may know John. He is a former member of the GNSO Council and a member of the the GNSO PDPs, the various working group guidelines, and, of course, to take questions. Before I hand over to John, I just wanted to show you some photos and names of the members of the GNSO policy support team. We would interact with many of you through calls and meetings like this, but if you are at an ICANN meeting or one of the events that we are at, hopefully if you see a familiar face, please come up and say hello. Our Vice President is David Olive, that many of you may have heard from or met. Marika is next here, and you see her photo. She's the team leader. And the third person that you should know is Glenn, who knows everything there is to know about how to get things done within the GNSO and ICANN. So if there's any three people you need to know from our team, there's probably on the slide, and Glenn is probably the one person that if you don't remember any of us, you should try to remember what she looks like and how to get in touch with her. That's me, and then we also have Julie and Lars, and you'll see from these slides that we're located in various different places. The policy support team overall, not just the GNSO, but the other SOs and ACs, are globally distributed so that we can better serve you and the rest of the community. Here's the rest of our team, and Natalie, whose voice you heard early on, will be taking you through how to use the Adobe Connect chat functions and other meeting functionalities to make sure that you feel right at home with us on this and every other call. So, John, I'm going to hand it over to you to take us a little bit through the agenda. And
Mary, can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
John, this is Natalie. We appear to have lost Mary for a few seconds. I'll just tell her to dial back in. So if you could just take it from here for the agenda, that would be fantastic.
I didn't mean to sound so doddering there at the start. I thought perhaps the call had gone cold. Anyway, thank you for being brave enough to join this particular call. My name is John Berard. As you have heard, finished a four-year term on the GNSO Council at the end of 2014. I am a member of the commercial and business users constituency and have been involved with ICANN and its activities since 2003. And so I have seen quite a bit and hope to forget a fair bit of it, even as there is more to learn. And so that's what we're here to do today. At least I think that's what everybody wants to do, is to figure out how to participate, how to offer meaningful comments and help move forward the safety, security, and resiliency of the domain name system, which, of course, is ICANN's primary mission. So one of the things that I'll ask you to do is to jump ahead to the end. You know, that part where people generally ask questions. And if you have questions, even now at the beginning or any time, You can either shout them out, which is not a problem, or you can ask them in the chat room, and that will give us all the opportunity to focus time and attention on them. The key thing, I think, based upon my conversations with Mary and Natalie about preparing for our session this morning, is to talk a bit about how things get done, and not just things in general, but things in particular with regard to policy. So you've all decided to participate in this generic name supporting organization call. The primary function of the GNSO is to aid and abet the GTLBs, which, as you probably know, are separate and apart from the CCTLBs, which are the country codes, and that the organization responsible within the GNSO for framing the policy is the GNSO Council. So this slide that's up now, the structure, it's always helpful, I think, to appreciate the size of the box so that we can always be encouraged to think outside the box. I'm sure that you have seen this diagram. The GNSO comprised of its many parties rolling up to the GNSO Council, which has the responsibility for policy matters with regard to the generic top-level domains. As a member of the commercial and business constituency, users constituency, I was in the non-contracted parties house. As you can see, the intellectual property constituency, the business constituency, the internet service provider constituency, and then the individuals who are either advocates or academics or researchers or others who comprise the closest thing that we have at ICANN to a individual user's constituency. And then on the other side of the house, the contracted parties. These are the companies, the registries like GoDaddy. I mean, the registries like Neustar or Verizon, VeriSign, oh, goodness gracious. And the registrars like GoDaddy or Enom that have contracts with ICANN to deliver services in support of registrants. So I think it's important to start with that because what happens is that it I hope, gives you a better appreciation for the nature of the inputs at the GNSO Council level. Because what happens at the GNSO Council level is essentially policy development. And this is not a Z that stands for Zorro, but a path by which an idea or a problem is identified and then ultimately resolved as a matter of policy. The key aspect here is the ignition. It's the upper left. It's the issues report. One of the things that is unsaid about ICANN is the role that the staff plays. What is said quite a bit about ICANN is that it is a bottom-up, consensus-driven decision-making body, which means that anybody should, can participate, that it reaches across as many communities as possible, that the broad and deep participation on a global basis is what gives it its authority. In fact, without the quality and the commitment of the staff that we have, and I'm saying this even though I know that Natalie and Mary are on the call, without staff of that caliber, we might never get out of asking questions. We might never get to providing the answers because when we see a problem as a member of the community, when we think that there is an opportunity, we have the chance via the GNSO Council to ask for an issue report on that. So if we think that there is a problem that is recurring that does not have a solution, we can ask for an issue report that then the staff generates to help us understand whether there are problems or not. You can track how that issue report flows through this process. But without that strong start, without the initial interest of the community and the initial organization and insight provided by the staff, we get nowhere. And so from that, as they say, mighty oaks from tiny acorns, we then have the opportunity for consideration, for the development of a working group, for the adoption of policy. And it is that process which provides, which creates really the strong, credible platform on which ICANN is built. And you, as individuals coming to this particular party, have a, on the very first day that you enter, have a chance to be a part of that. There is no need to be to sit on the sidelines because the mechanisms are in place for participation. Now, I'll stop there for a second and ask if there are any questions, or from Natalie or Mary, if there are any corrections. Hearing none, we'll move on. The next slide, providing working group requirements, because if an issue report is determined by the council to demand further inquiry, if there is a reason to pursue it, then a working group will be created. And working groups are a way to gather people from the GNSO and elsewhere to bring their expertise, collaborate, and consider the implications of what the issue report has discovered. Depending upon which constituency you are attached to, there may be requirements that would dictate your participation. In some cases, you might have to be approved by the You might have to be approved by the constituency to be a member, but generally a working group is open to all at your own nomination. And if you recall the emphasis placed on the photo of Glenn, the GNSO Secretariat, she comes into play here because any one of us who wants to be put on a particular working group's mailing list or to seek participation in that working group, begin by reaching out to Glenn with an expression of interest. Now, again, I'll stop and ask Mary and Natalie, have I made that too simple a process, Mary?
John, I think you're good.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the the group gathered? Let's see. There may be one here. Okay. And so what happens with that working group is it goes through as many iterations as it needs to conclude with a recommendation, which is then brought to the council, which is then brought to the full community for comment, which then leads to a final report, which is the trigger for action. So we're now at the lower right-hand slot on the Z that we saw earlier. When you begin to participate in ICANN, one of the myths that you will encounter is that the policy development process is too long. That will be for each of you to determine, because some of us are less patient than others. I personally am among the least patient of people who have participated recently as council members, but even I came to appreciate how quickly a consensus could be driven and policy developed, and discovered by looking at the data, which I think is really important, that the policy development process, in order to be as meaningful as it is, can't be quick. It must be thorough. And so even being thorough, the statistics tell us, that it is not nearly as slow-moving as the mythology that has grown up around it would have you believe. As you get into this, and I hope that you all will, if you find that I am wrong about that, please let me know, because the more information I have, the better advocate I can be. Same with you. The more information you have, the better advocate you can be, appreciating that you all right now have a seat at the table, and it's up to each of you, up to each of us, to determine how expansively, how actively we want to make that. And so my hope is that this grounding in the methodology can give you a greater sense of ease, a greater comfort in exposing yourself and your ideas for the community to consider and perhaps even adopt. The goal of the policy development process, of course, is to develop consensus policy. Now, in preparing for this session, Mary and Natalie and I had a conversation about the phrase picket fence. And it was suggested that on a global basis, the phrase might not have the meaning it has perhaps in the United States or Canada or the UK. But the picket fence is really just a metaphor for a part of what ICANN does that is protected from the outside. And in this case, it is protected from actions that would impinge on the mandated responsibilities of ICANN to be responsive to the security, the stability, and resiliency of the domain name system. Anything else, even if it finds its way into contracts, is the result of consensus policy. So, for example, we are in the midst of a serious review of who is policy. Who is, of course, is the short term, the shorthand way we describe the information that is provided by a registrant, someone who registers a domain name that is then either available or not, either available in full or in part, either truthful or not. And the process underway right now is to revisit exactly what the global internet community expectations are for who is. As you might imagine, there are advocates who are interested in promoting free speech, perhaps in nations that might not be so agreeable with that concept, that might find some of the proposals that come from law enforcement to be problematic. It's not to say that a human rights attorney and a captain in the Sûreté are at odds for ill reason, but that the differences of opinion need to be addressed by the global community so that the decision that results, the policy that results, can have the support of the entire global community. That's why sometimes it may seem as if decisions take a long time, but no good decision is generally going to be rushed at. And the outcome is so important to the integrity of the domain name system that it is one in particular with the who is circumstance that needs to be given due and thorough consideration. So that's the kind of thing that that can result in a consensus policy that would then bind registrars and registries to deliver on behalf of the global internet community. There is some more background in the slides. I'm sure that you either have or will have access to these slides. There's no reason for me to read from them, although I must admit I do enjoy that picture of the picket fence there. It looks sort of like the one out in front of my house. although mine's not as clean as that one. I'll stop right now and ask, are there any questions that anybody might have with what we've covered so far? And again, Natalie, Mary, are there any errors that I need to correct before we move on? Quiet crowd today. Okay. We then get to the working group, the work of the working group, which I guess would be an interesting way to put it. There is a mentor of mine at ICANN who describes the working group as the essential aspect of what we do at ICANN. And if you think about the role that the working groups have in helping the GNSO Council substantiate consensus policy that then binds registrars and registries and is supported by the global internet community, you can begin to get a sense of just what he was saying, that this is really the best first step that anyone can take in becoming a part of who and what ICANN is. I'll read this one thing because I get a bit of a chuckle out of it. The objective of the GNSO Working Group guidelines is to assist working groups to optimize productivity and effectiveness. That's a very polite way of saying that the guidelines are in place to keep people from killing each other when differences of opinion arise, because sometimes working groups can get quite heated. Some of them certainly can glide to a decision more easily, more quickly. But on matters of real import, on which there are economic interests at play, in which there are perhaps cultural or national interests at play, it can get pretty intense. And so the guidelines help structure the discussion so that even in the most intense working group, there can be progress made against a work plan that can help alleviate what might otherwise be roadblocks to getting things done. And if anybody wants to get a sense of just what that kind of working group might be, you should ask Mary or Natalie to give you a brief on the Vertical Integration Working Group, which preceded the launch of the new GTLD program. Mary, I hope you don't mind me putting the onus on you there. For that.
Not at all, John.
So the standard I do also want to make sure that I cover this particularly opaque point. Because of the nature of some of the working group subjects, it became clear early on that a working group was unlikely to always say yes or no, that there was always going to be some shading to the output. Now, in a parliamentary procedure-driven environment, yes is consensus and no is opposition. And so over time, the GNSO working group model has adopted a series of endpoints. So there could be full consensus, which means that everybody's on board. There could be consensus, which is that most are on board. There could be strong support but significant opposition, which means it's as close to 50-50 as you can find. There could be divergence, which might in fact be 50-50, as many supporting as opposing. And then even after a decision or a label is selected, whether it's full consensus, strong support, or divergence, there can still be minority views that are appended to the output of the working group. For an example of this, one could look at the minority view that was appended to the initial who is policy development process work to get a sense of just what that might mean, how it might read, what it might look like. But the interesting point, of course, is I mentioned earlier that the generic top-level domains are different than the country code top-level domains. And so there is UK and DE and 230 or so others of that sort. Their working groups operate in a more streamlined environment, and their working groups only have two outcomes, essentially a yes or a no outcome. And it would be great if over time the GNSO working groups could begin to focus more on a smaller set so that they would be more understandable and perhaps even more actionable. But at this point, there are probably more profitable things to focus on than trying to change the consensus designations in the GNSO council, in the GNSO working group environment. So I will pause there and ask if there are any questions about participating in a working group. I would encourage you to think seriously about this, and it's not a hard assignment if you want to become an observer, just to be able to listen in on the way that the working groups are conducted. Generally, a call every couple of weeks. If the issue is urgent, it might even be less frequent than that. There is generally an active email list that helps drive the message, the issue along when people aren't on the phone together. There is also generally a face-to-face meeting that would occur at one of the now three international ICANN meetings. And so there will be a number of working group meetings that will be held in Buenos Aires when ICANN 53 gets underway in the middle of June. And so working groups become not just a way to participate in helping solve a particular problem, but they also become a way to get a three-dimensional sense of what ICANN is, does, and who participates. The working group essentially is a microcosm of the internet, of ICANN overall. That's not to say that every working group chair is, you know, FADI, but each working group chair will generally have a history of the organization and a working sense of how to, in a collaborative way, drive the working group forward. So that I think you'll be surprised, pleased certainly, that the quality of the working group chairs who are selected by the working group have in helping make the process move as quickly and as efficiently and effectively as it does. So I'll stop there and ask if there are any questions about that. You can also, of course, I say I'll stop there and then I immediately pick up. I apologize for that. But if you were to spend a few minutes on the ICANN website, you would quickly find a list of the current working groups. You would quickly find access to information that can help you better understand the public comment period and how to divine value and insight from the comments of others. And it would help you, I think, quickly become comfortable with what I know to some people who look at ICANN for the first time is an impenetrable set of acronyms and meetings. You know, one of the things that I'll point out here, because she's on the phone, is that Mary Wong represents an interesting asset, not just as a staff member who supports the GNSO, but Mary, of course, is a lawyer who previously had been a GNSO council member herself, and before joining the staff was also on the CCNSO council. And so she embodies, no pun intended, the insights and attributes that help make the organization work. It also reinforces the point I made about Glenn. The staff is accessible and expects that you'll call and ask when you have a question. It's not one that is going to try to avoid contact. They're not a normal company's customer service department. They are, in fact, active members of the community themselves. So that gets us to tips and tricks, which I wish I had been apprised of 10 years ago when I first encountered ICANN. And I know, Natalie, you said that you wanted to take the group through the tips and tricks. So if that still holds, I'll turn things over to you now.
Thank you very much, John. And yes, that is indeed the case. John had a fantastic job there of running you through a very complex set of procedures and making them sound stupendously easy. What I'm going to try to do now is to show you where you can access the information. You've learned about the procedures. You might need to know a bit about what goes on around them. What newcomers generally say is that they find information access fairly confusing. There are different landing points where you can find different explanations and different backgrounds. And so I'm going to try to run you through a few of them. So the obvious stop first is the GNSO website. And if you look in the pod, we call the little squares on the Adobe Connect room a pod, at the bottom right-hand corner called Web Links, you'll have a few of the links to wiki and website pages I'm going to talk to you about. So you can click on these as we go along. The GNSO website is pretty handy. It's where most of the GNSO information is centralized. I call it the GNSO shopping window. It shows you the core of what's going on and what's gone on in the past within the GNSO. So if you want to browse different working groups, find out the background information, it's extremely convenient. You also have on the main page an area called the Quick Information Box, which is your motorway access to information about working groups. So I would advise you to go and have a look at that. What you will get from that Quick Information Box is a link to the GNSO Wiki. This is a community wiki. The access is open to everyone, and that's where the proper work, the ongoing work and activities of working groups are showcased. That's where you'll have membership lists of the members of the working group. That's where you'll have the meeting dates and the documents shown during meetings, and more importantly, the regularly updated documents which the working groups are working on. So going onto the wiki and browsing through the different working groups will give you a very good idea at what level of advancement they are in their projects. And the third landing spot is a GNSO master calendar. And as I wrote in the chat at the bottom, it's not only a calendar where you can check the time and date of the working groups, for instance. You can also have a quick glance and see how recurring these working groups are. You know, maybe you're more comfortable with a group who meets up once every 2 weeks rather than every week. Some working groups who are going into high peaks of activity will meet twice a week. So you can see on the calendar how often these people are meeting up. Equally, more importantly, that's where you'll find all the recordings of these working groups. By recordings, we mean not only the MP3, but also the transcripts, so the written transcripts. All our working group calls are recorded and transcribed. And equally, as is the case today, the Adobe Connect Room recordings. The Adobe Connectroom recordings, therefore, will give you the URL to see the activity in the Adobe Connectroom, as well as the audio. So that's a very convenient place to refer to. If you don't have the time to browse and just to check every single working group and wiki space, I would suggest that you download the reference documents that are currently on the screen now. These constitute the backbone of all the working groups. It's not necessary to know them by heart, but it is necessary to maybe have them on your desktop and be able to refer to them. Sometimes in working groups when there's a heated debate, some bits of information are dropped. You're not sure what they mean. It's certainly not the right time and moment to ask the question. But it's always good to have these documents in the back, so after the working group call, you can go back and refer to them. Please don't worry about taking these URLs down. I'll be sending the slides out to you all at the end of the call, so you'll be able to gather them there. Another main complaint we've heard about, not only newcomers, but equally your most seasoned community members, are the huge amount of acronyms you have in the GNSO, but also within ICANN itself. On the GNSO homepage, and equally, as John mentioned to us when we were preparing for the webinar, on the BC website, you have acronym helpers. This is, again, another good page to bookmark. If there's a feature that interests you and that you'd like to know more about, for instance, there's a new aspect of the ICANN website called ICANN Learn, which is it's a learning space where you have different courses, short and long, where you can find out where you can spend maybe half an hour studying one subject or a lot longer on another. It's the advantage of this is that it is regularly being updated, and so very handy if you want to have a quick look. Of course, the best advice you'll ever get will be from an experienced working group member. Either from your community or from another, you'll find that many working group members are available to help. You can meet them at ICANN meetings or equally in your working group. I also happen to have John Berard's cell phone number, so I can provide that too, should you wish. Failing that, if you cannot find a working group member available at the moment you need it, you can always contact the GNSO policy staff. So you can contact the GNSO secretariat, that's Glenn, who you saw at the beginning on the photos, and myself. I'll put the email in the chat in a few minutes. Equally, any member of staff will be more than happy to help. Now, our email addresses are built always in the same way. It's our first name dot our last name at ICANN.org. So please don't hesitate to shout out, and if we don't know the answer to your question, we will direct you to someone who does. Once you've decided what working group you would like to be part of, you will receive an email from us asking you to confirm whether you would like to be registered as an observer or a member. And you might have heard about these statuses in other situations. The one I'm going to explain to you now is the one that concerns the GNSO working groups only. The status of observer and member can mean different things in other cross-community working groups, for instance. In GNSO working groups, if you register as observer, you will have access to all the mailing list discussions. You'll have access to the post-call information, which I talked about earlier, so the recordings and the transcripts. You will not, however, have access to the closed mailing list on which details of the conference calls are circulated. And by details, I mean the Adobe Connect link and the phone-in numbers, much the same as the email invitation you received for today's webinar. And this, your decision here will be based on how involved you would like to be, or maybe how nervous you are entering your first working group. Depending on time, you might want to register as an observer first and just read the contents and get a feel through the mailing list. And then maybe in a few months' time, upgrade to member. This is entirely your choice. A lot of newcomers are very happy to register as member first to get a proper feel of the working group activities in the conference calls. Deciding to be an observer or a member at the beginning of your activity in the working group, this is not set in stone. As written on the slide, you can change your status with just a quick email sent to the GNSO secretariat, and we can switch you from one to another as you like. So please don't hesitate to make use of that. If you do decide to be a member of a working group, and we sincerely hope you will at the end of this webinar, you'll be receiving email invitations to the working groups. So if these working groups meet weekly, which at the moment is the case for a lot of them, you'll receive an email invitation a week before the call with a calendar invitation to download to your mailing box calendar, and you'll receive another reminder invitation a day or two before the actual call. If you cannot make this call and you know ahead of time you cannot make it, please remember to send an email to the GNSO secretariat sending an apology. We do not need to know the reasons why. Please don't think we do. We do, however, need to record your apology. This is because attendance is taken after every working group call. In attendance, we count people who have attended, but equally, people who are ahead of time have sent their apology. This is very important, so please remember to do so. If, for instance, you're traveling and you're going to have problems, network problems, or you know, you're going to incur huge telephone bills if you're traveling abroad, so you can't dial into the conference, please let us know ahead of time with a telephone number, and we will get the telecom operator to dial out to you. This can be to your cell or to your hotel room. It doesn't matter as long as we have your number. This means that 5 minutes before the call start time, the operator will dial out and join you to the call. This is a far more economical way of dealing with your travel obligations. Once you've dialed into the phone bridge, some people call the telephone connection an audio bridge, a bridge, a phone bridge. All of those mean the way you're connected via the phone. So once you've phoned the phone bridge, you will talk to an operator who will ask you for the passcode of the call. This passcode, as was the case today with welcome in the email, this passcode has to be told to the operator and make sure that our calls are only restricted to members only. You will then be asked for your first and last name and entered into the call. This is not for the telecom provider's interest. It's only, again, for us as staff to be able to record attendance. Once you've connected with your phone, you can join the Adobe Connect room, as you've done today. It's very important in the working group call to log in with your first and last name. First, because you might have another member with the same first name as you. Equally, for attendance purposes, once again, you need to be able to recall your first and last name. And equally, out of simple courtesy for other members of the working groups who like to know who they're talking with. If you don't want to join the phone, or maybe you can't want to join via the phone, there is a way of taking part in the Adobe Connect room with your computer microphone. So to do that, you can click on the telephone icon at the top of the Adobe Connect room toolbar. So as you can see, it's a white telephone icon there with a little drop-down arrow to the right of it. So if you click on that and follow all instructions carefully, it takes about 5 or 6 seconds, nothing more. If you accept all the instructions there, you will see the telephone icon turn into a microphone icon. That means you've enabled your voice over IP microphone in the Adobe Connect room. Exactly the same as with your phone, you will need to remain muted if you're not speaking. So to do that, you would click on the little drop-down white arrow to the right of the microphone icon and mute. If you look in the list of participants here, if you look at Sarah Brocky's name, she has a muted microphone next to her name. This means she has activated her Adobe Connect room microphone and muted. Thank you very much, Sarah, for providing me with the opportunity to use you as an example. Other feature in the Adobe Connect room is the chat. Now, a little thing you might not know is that the content of working group conference calls chats is archived. We always keep the Adobe Connect room chats, which is why it's important to adhere to the ICANN expected standards of behavior. However, if you wish to have a private conversation, be it with another member of the community or with a member of staff, it is possible to talk to them privately. to do that, you hover your mouse over the name in the participant list, and a drop-down menu appears where you can talk to them privately. This can be useful, for instance, if you have technical difficulties with your phone and you would like a dial-out. You might not like to share your phone number with everyone in the working group. In that case, you can communicate it to a member of staff via the private chat. Equally, if you have a question you're maybe feeling a bit nervous about, you can ask the chair or a member of staff via chat. The elements of private chat, so by private I mean the discussion with one other person that you'll have selected in the attendance, are not kept. Staff do not have access to them, so please rest assured. The last element I wanted to talk about was an ICANN protocol regarding conference call behavior. Now, because some working groups have got many, many members, there is a tradition regarding questions. You cannot just switch on your mic and ask a question. Before you ask a question, you must raise your hand. Now, to raise your hand, you look at the top of the AC Room toolbar, and you see a little white icon with a hand raised. So you would click on that to raise your hand. This does not give you the right to ask a question immediately. If you look at Mary in the host list, she's just raised her hand, so an icon appears next to her. If Mary wanted to ask a question, she's raised her hand. This means that she's put in the question queue. That means that the chair has noticed her question, and once he's finished making his point, he will ask Mary first to ask her question. Once he's finished asking a question, she would then go back into the icon at the top of the toolbar and lower her hand. If she keeps her hand raised after she's received a reply to her question, the chair will think she has a second question. And it's a common thing to forget to lower your hand in conference calls. And if this happens, you'll hear a lot of people say, "Oh, I'm so sorry, this is an old hand." An old hand doesn't mean anything serious other than the fact they forgot to lower their hand once their question has received a reply. In the same drop-down menu with the hand-raised icon, you have a little series of emoticons. The ones which are used most in ICANN or GNSO meetings are the green tick to express agreement and the red cross to express disagreement. And Mary is showing the green tick in the next to her name at this very moment. These can be used for several things. They can be used to express spontaneous agreement to something someone's saying, but equally, the chair can use them as a quick way to poll his working group members. If, for instance, they are discussing a need for an additional working group call, which wasn't planned, for example, the week after, he could quickly ask you and your fellow working group members to express their opinion with these emoticons. If you were available for a call, you would choose a green tick, and if you couldn't make it, you would choose the red cross. So just to make sure I haven't lost you all, could you please use those red and green emoticons now to let us know how we're doing and if you're finding this webinar helpful? Brilliant. Thank you ever so much. That's the advantage also of having you all sign in with your first and last names. That we get a lot of green ticks. And Navid gave a red cross. Thank you very much, Navid, for the correction. Okay, perfect. Thank you ever so much. If you do have issues or things you're not sure of regarding how to join a working group and how to connect to a working group conference call, please remember that we're here to help. That's what we do, is run and assist with conference calls. So there are no silly questions regarding this. So please don't hesitate to either ask the question in the chat now, ask over the audio, or equally email us at the end of the call. It'd be with great pleasure that we would help you engage in a working group activity. Thank you very much all, and I'll hand this back to John and Mary.
Mary, you have a last comment?
Hi, John. Hi, Natalie, and hi, everybody. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we can.
So I just wanted I just wanted to pick up on something that you said and that Natalie said, and that really is to encourage everyone to join a working group if there is a policy process starting or even already in progress that matches your interest or a group that you represent. John, I think you're the one who said you could just jump in right away. And Natalie, you said that you could start as an observer. You'd rather do it that way as well. What I wanted to add to that is that, John, as you said, I was a community member before, so I'm not really saying this as staff. I'm saying this from my own personal experience. Besides the staff who are here to help, I found that there are many, many community members, including some veterans and people who have had a long experience at ICANN, who are always very welcoming. So even if you're a little shy, you will always find someone who is going to be helpful or several someone. So don't let unfamiliarity or the number of acronyms or anything like that hold you back. And as Natalie said, we really look forward to having you on one or more of our working groups. And I just want to end by emphasizing that you can join a working group even if it's already started. Now, obviously, I don't think we'd recommend that you join a working group as it's making its final recommendations. But, John, as you mentioned at the beginning, the process can take some time for very good reasons. So don't feel that you've missed the boat at any point in time. And on that, John, I'm going to hand it back to you. And, Natalie, I think we might have some questions as well. So I'm going to stop talking now for a minute.
Well, I want to thank everybody for participating. I want to thank you, Natalie, and Mary for asking me to help out. Always glad to do that. One of the things that you can take away from this call today is you're now an expert in remote participation. And, in fact, one of the significant investments that ICANN makes is in the ability to deliver remote participation. And so just because ICANN is meeting in Buenos Aires does not mean you have to be in Buenos Aires to fully participate in the discussion. And for those of you who will be there, that would be great. For those who won't, the opportunity through the tools such as the Adobe Connect, email lists, and other mechanisms allow you to stay current as if you were in Buenos Aires. And I think that this call today has given you a bit of a taste of how that works, because each of us could be almost anywhere, even as we collaborate. So thank you for listening, and if there are questions, that would be great. I will sign off, and thank you for your participation.
Mary, again, I wanted to thank John again for really, as Natalie said, making what can seem like a very intimidating, complicated process accessible. And I hope that you will join and you will find that sound complicated. It might seem a little odd, but that it is still a very productive process. And so on that note, thank you all for attending. Thank you again, John, and thank you, Natalie. We will see you and talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all. Lorenz, you may now stop the recordings. This meeting is closed.